You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Angelica Baker's debut novel, Our Little Racket, is set during the 2008 financial crisis, the worst economic disaster since the Great Depression of 1929, with a focus on five women whose lives are dramatically changed by the downfall of a financial titan named Bob D'Amico. It's published by Echo, and it brings Angelica Baker to our show now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Our little racket is about the world of the 1%. Is it a world that you're familiar with?
So I did not grow up in Greenwich in Connecticut, but I grew up in Los Angeles in a very wealthy community, but my family circumstances were a bit more modest. So I grew up kind of in this, not dissimilar to Greenwich, in a very insular, wealthy world, but feeling like a little bit of an outsider, a little bit observant, and sort of not quite part of it.
So you probably identify with the nanny in this
story.
Yes.
if I had to pick someone, yes.
How do you go researching a book like this, not just for the historical facts, but also the economic jargon, and also the more subtle roles that govern the lives of the elite?
I did a lot of reading. There was a period of time where I was struggling to write, and I stopped, and I didn't write at all for about 6 months, and just read anywhere from, you know, social history books that had been published since 2008. There was a lot of magazine coverage that year that was sort of gossipy and about the social world behind these men. So I read a lot of things like that. I read a lot of different books about finance, and then I gave it to finance friends to sort of help me fine-tune the jargon.
To some degree, this is like an update on the world that Edith Wharton wrote about.
Well, I hope so. That would be my hope, that that's what readers would think. But yes, I think that if you're writing about...
I didn't say you were as good as Edith Wharton.
I think that if you're writing about Americans and money and class, you are probably in some way thinking about Edith Wharton at some point.
Or Henry James.
Both, yes.
Who were the five women Our Little Racket follows?
The book follows Madison, who is the 15-year-old daughter of this CEO whose bank has just failed. Amanda, who is her best friend, whose father is openly critical of that CEO.
He's the journalist who's actually tracking the story.
Mm-hmm. Lily is the family's nanny. Isabel is the man's wife. And Mina is Isabel's good friend and the wife of a man who works at a rival investment bank.
And the story begins kind of on September 15, 2008, when the investment bank Weiss and Partners is closed and Bob D'Amico has to deal with allegations of malfeasance and then has to deal with the judgments of the community. Mm-hmm. And this affects the five women you've written about very strongly as well.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in the idea of all of these people who are very close to what's going on into this sort of big headline of the potential financial malfeasance, as you said, but they're close, but they're not a part of it. They have one foot in, one foot out. They don't really know what's going on either.
None of them are worked at at Weiss and Partners. Mm-hmm. But Weiss and Partners kind of like Lehman Brothers?
Yes. It's not, I mean, someone who is certainly more, you know, better versed in what actually happened at Lehman Brothers than I am could tell you it's not the same situation, but it's obviously similar.
Bob D'Amico is known throughout the banking community for his loyalty to his employees. Would he have known this is coming and that things would fall apart due to alleged criminal actions on his part?
Again, I'm not speaking about what actually happened.
Yeah, but
I'm just
you invented these
right,
characters.
Right. In my book, I think that he is perhaps a bit in denial about how much he should have known and sort of the panicky steps that he took in the final days and sort of ended up doing some things that are not perhaps legal.
I once spoke to a famous economist and asked him how Bernie Madoff could have continued his practices. He must have known that somewhere along the line it was all going to fall apart. And the economist said, there's a lot of deluding oneself. As long as you're keeping it going, you don't imagine it's ever going to happen,
absolutely,
ever fall apart.
And I also think that Bernie Madoff is a little bit more of a clear-cut villainous situation, whereas something like what happened with Bear Stearns or Lehman Brothers, you know, almost 10 years ago, it's a little harder to exactly place blame. There were a lot of people to blame for what happened.
So in this plot, after a couple of weeks in hiding, D'Amico comes home to hide in the studio, and then he has a series of late-night conversations with his daughter. Mm-hmm. Now, why would he confide in her, of all people, not his wife or one of his business partners?
I think that he has a very special relationship with his daughter in some ways, and his daughter almost worships him, really, in a way that the other women in the book do not. She doesn't really see him very clearly. She's still young enough that she has those feelings about her father and really looks up to him. And so I think that it's important to him that she believe that he didn't do anything wrong, even if that means that he has to perhaps lie to her to have that conversation.
But then she has to work it out for herself.
Yeah, she's old enough to start figuring it out.
What social and cultural truths do you think are revealed by the ways in which Madison, Isabel, mm-hmm. Lily, Mina, and Amanda react or interact?
I think the tendency to sort of stick to your clan in a time of crisis, however you define that, is definitely something that's reflected in all five women. But I also think the tendency to reassure yourself that you're not the problem. Well, you know, I see this situation with a clear eye. I can tell what's wrong and what's right.
And is this a man's thing? You blame it on men? Because they do dominate the financial world.
In this specific community that I chose to write about, the women are very separate from their husband's professional financial world. So, yes.
And I'm assuming that you intended this novel to read like, to be kind of an examination or an exploration of the multiple roles that women can inhabit. Mm-hmm. Mother, daughter, mm-hmm. nanny, sister, best friend.
Absolutely.
When Madison has to face her classmates the morning after the scandal, she realizes whatever she did, short of actual violence, would be considered handling it so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it was fun to write about the teenage girls in the sort of that immediate aftermath, that first morning, because teenagers do kind of have, you know, they can tell when there's blood in the water, they know when to strike, but they also have a very healthy appetite for drama and, you know, high stakes.
My guess is Angelica Baker, who's written a novel called Our Little Racket. Why that title?
For a while, I was concerned that my book would come out without a title. I was having a very hard time deciding on one, but I really thought that I would hear the right thing and fall in love. And I read a poem by Ann Carson called Little Racket that's sort of about sitting in a house somewhere waiting for a storm to come, getting ready for the storm, and then wondering if it's ever going to come. And then just when you think that it's not, it arrives. Mm-hmm. And the poem is called Little Racket, and I read that and thought, this really reminds me of my book, really, and it just felt like it fit.
For the nanny, Lily, this situation means deciding where her loyalties lie when it comes to the family to which she's both an essential member and also as an outsider, as one of the, perhaps, at least in theory, a victim mm-hmm. of what's going on.
Lily was interesting to me for just what you said, that she's an outsider. She's not a member of the family. She cares about the children as though they were her family, but when push comes to shove, she's not a blood relative. But she's also, perhaps more than any of the other women, she's chosen to be where she is. She's chosen to be a part of this family. She's chosen to, you know, look the other way or ignore certain things. And so she's having to sort of wrangle with whether that makes her culpable, too.
You also didn't make these women totally lovable. The wife is kind of cold.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Madison's rebellion. Mina and Isabel turn to drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy is challenging here.
I think that fiction is a play, you know, a fictional story can inspire empathy or even more than empathy, just curiosity and interest and understanding of different sort in a way that other things can't. So I think that if I met these women, if I read an interview with them, I might find them off-putting, but the hope is that in fiction you can explore aspects of their experience that are compelling.
They reap the benefits of an achieved, fulfilled American dream story without having to do much of the work.
Yes, but when the book picks up their story, they are also starting to see the cracks in the foundation of that American dream, I think.
Now, this is your first novel,
yes,
but you have written quite a bit in preparing for this, actually, you won some awards when you were in college?
I did. I won a few awards for fiction at Yale, which is where I went to school.
So did the short stories you were writing have any relationship to this book?
I don't know that anything I've written before this book, you know, nothing got worked into the story. It's not like I went and took something else and put it in this book. But I think that I had a reader once tell me that it seemed like all the people and everything I wrote seemed like they might know each other, whether they were in Los Angeles or New York or Connecticut or somewhere else, that I think some of the concerns about wealth and class and families in crisis pop up again and again.
All these women must ask themselves, where's the line between willful ignorance and unspoken complicity?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I guess anyone who is connected to, whether it's a Bernie Madoff or mm-hmm. or a character like yours, Bob D'Amico, would have to ask herself.
I think so. And I think that's also, I'm looking at someone asking themselves that question at a very high level in a very extreme case. But I think that's something that that was very widespread in 2008. There were a lot of people who maybe understood some little part of what was going on, but looked the other way. And then, you know, the entire country was affected by it, obviously.
Did you know when you started writing this novel that you were going to set it in the aftermath of the Great Recession?
I did. That was really the only initial idea that I had. A lot of things have changed from that first draft. The first draft was actually in the first person and narrated by Madison, and that really wasn't working. So then I took a break and started thinking about adding other women in and exploring the wider social atmosphere, and that was more compelling to me.
Most first novels are written in the first person because, to some degree, it's easier for somebody who's navigating her way through a novel
sure.
to do that. So how much more complicated was it to move to third person?
It was complicated, but in a funny way, I think that what would be much more difficult for me to do would be to write something that was closely autobiographical in the first person, because it would feel so much more vulnerable and I would be so much more defensive about it. This really feels like there's no doubt in my mind that these are people I imagined and that I, you know, made up a story about them.
And you're going to be asked, how autobiographical yeah. is this? You know that. Every writer is asked that.
Yes, yes. I have been asked that to an extent, mostly in that when I first meet people, they say, so where in Greenwich did you grow up? And mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I didn't grow up in Greenwich. And I sort of explain, I grew up in a part of Los Angeles that's not dissimilar to parts of Greenwich. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a natural impulse to assume that when you read. I certainly do that sometimes when I read, even when I know the person who wrote the book and know that it's not based on them. So I think it's, you want to look, you know, read between the lines and see something of the writer. I think it's a normal thing.
Well, I think it's fair to say this is a work of fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Read it as
I
such.
I made it up. Yeah, exactly.
I made it all up.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming by to talk about it. Are you at work at more short stories, or are you going to write another novel?
I have to be honest, I'm not currently at work on anything, but I am hoping to be at work on another novel soon.
Meanwhile, you're teaching?
I have taught in the past. I've taught at Columbia and at Manhattanville College.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Not doing that anymore?
I would be happy to do that again. I just don't have anything on the schedule for next semester yet.
Meanwhile, listeners can read Angelica Baker's novel, Our Little Bracket. It is published by Echo. It's been a real pleasure having you on our show.
Thank
and congratulations
you so much.
For all the wonderful response the book has gotten.
Thank you very much for having me.